The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Mary Margaret Castleberg running for House of Delegates. She is in a key district, open seat, Rodman seat. Debbie Rodman running for state senator against Siobhan Donovan. We have predicted already that Donovan is going to win that race. She's very tough to beat. But so this is an open seat. If the Republicans have any hope of maintaining control of the House of Delegates come January after on the November 5th election, any hope that they have, rest on Mary Margaret Castleberg. If she loses, they're toast. So this is probably the most important race that the Republicans have. They have to flip this seat, or there's no math, in my view, that gets them to 51. With Castleberg winning, they do have an opportunity to get there. And she has been touted as one of the stronger Republican candidates in this cycle. So she's going to be joining us here momentarily. And obviously, this is the Henrico area that she is in, and we'll have a chance to chat with her. She's got a couple of different positions than some other Republicans have, so we're going to flush those out as well right here in the John Fredericks Radio Network, trucking the truth across America, 73rd District, part of Henrico. We're on the John Fredericks Radio Network live in Richmond. I'm your Godzilla of the truth. Joining us now is Mary Margaret Castleberg. Mary Margaret running for House of Delegates member in Henrico. Mary Margaret, great to have you with us.
Thank you, John. Thanks for inviting me onto your show. Glad to be here this morning.
All right, let's go right to some of your most recent policies, Mary Margaret, in a district, by the way, that the Republicans have to win or they cannot control the House of Delegates, in my judgments. If you lose, you're going to get caucus of the corn will take over. And ladies and gentlemen, I've been ringing the bell and ringing it. I'm not sure who's listening, but the crazies are at the gate. I mean, these people are certifiably nuts. This is not your Democratic Party of the past where it's Dick Saslaw and Janet Howe going to chamber meetings. No, these people want to take your guns. They want infanticide. They want to do what the governor said, which is third term trimester late abortion coming out of the birth canal. Nobody will admit that. You got Mark Levine putting legislation in Northern Virginia to confiscate every assault weapon in Virginia. They want to take your guns just like Beto does. They want to get rid of right to work, and it goes on from there. So I'm encouraging our listeners, wake up here and understand what the consequences are if caucus of the corn takes over. Now, having said that, Mary Margaret, you've come out with some policy on gun legislation that is different from many of your Republican colleagues. You did a TV ad on it. I was hoping that you could elaborate on that.
Okay. Well, thanks for the opportunity to do that. I did, after speaking with lots of folks and doing my own research, and really this all comes for me from wanting to keep people safe, and that is something that is a concern, and feeling like we need to do something. We need to address the issues that are out there with regard to gun violence, and I think it's difficult to do, but I think we can balance some reforms with the rights of law-abiding citizens, and that's really where it comes down to. It's a balancing act. It's where do you draw the line? Obviously, the Constitution, constitutionally protected rights are sacrosanct. But where I'm coming from, again, is public safety, and there are really just a few areas where I think we can do something. One is purchases of guns at gun shows. In my view, if you go to a public gun show to purchase a gun, you should have a background check, period. You know, it begins and ends there. I'm advocating for some magazine limits. I don't know where that line is, but I know it's not 100. And I also am advocating for comprehensive background checks, which is, as you know, distinct and different than universal background checks, which my opponent is clearly advocating for that. And by that, I mean the integrity of the data in the background check system needs to be solid. But also, when a juvenile offender creates or commits a violent act, that information should be fed into the background check system. The Parkland shooting is an example of a case where that would have been of benefit, in the system. And then finally, and probably the area that's gotten the most attention from my commercial is the red flag laws. And I like some of the concepts of red flag laws, but want people to understand that a red flag law by itself, it can't work in isolation. It really needs to work in conjunction with some mental health system improvements. And it just doesn't work by itself. This is where the balancing of constitutional rights and, needs to be considered. And, I just think that when you consider this type of legislation, there are certain parameters or certain principles that I would need to make sure are addressed before I would vote to approve any kind of red flag law. And obviously, someone's due process law rights need to be protected. That's fundamental to our system of government, and I would not want to violate that in any kind of red flag legislation. And again, it's really all about safety. And if someone is identified as a person who is of imminent risk to themselves or others, we need a system to be able to expedite that matter before a court so that it can be addressed. And we also need to make sure that it's not this type of law is not abused. So any good red flag law would need to have provisions in it that provide remedies against someone who tries to abuse the law for, personal reason or vendetta or something like that. I mean, generally, those are the principles that I'm operating with, and that's how I will approach any type of legislation in this area.
You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Trucking the Truth. I'm with Mary Margaret Castleberg, Republican candidate for the House of Delegates in RICO. That's the 73rd district. That's the district that Debbie Rodman represents. Debbie Rodman, of course, part of the infamous Kathy Tran infanticide legislation. And Rodman now running for state senator against Siobhan Donovan. Donovan's going to win that race, my judgment. Without this seat, Republicans have zero chance of winning 51 seats in the House and maintaining control and stopping caucus of the corn. Let me get these straight, if I may, Mary Margaret. So on guns, you're differing from your party in some areas, and I just want to recap this so I understand it. You want to close the gun show loophole, right? So you want universal background checks. I'm in favor of that because that basically
not universal background checks.
Okay, go ahead.
If you go to a gun show to purchase a gun, you should have a background check.
Okay.
Universal background checks really encompasses all transfers, private transfers, transfer of a dad to his son, or, neighbor to neighbor, that sort of thing, and I'm not advocating for that.
So the only
about gun show purchases.
So I'm sorry, I just want to get this straight for the purposes of time. The only background check loophole that you want to eliminate is those involved buying a gun at a gun show out of the back of somebody's truck. That's it.
Yes, from a private seller, yes.
Got it. Okay. Second thing is, and I'm in favor of that. And the, as you know, President Trump has called on senators, Republican senators, to take a look at this, what might make sense. And I agree with him that you have to take a hard look at this. And my whole thing is, if you're going to have background checks, why have a loophole? That's like saying you have to pay to get on Metro, but if you don't pay, if you just walk through the turnstile, you're not prosecuted for that. So then why would anybody pay it? Just the whole thing makes no sense to me. So we're in agreement there. Let's get to the things that I think are easily to understand. One of the things that you want is, you said, comprehensive background checks so that more of your data goes into the system. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
And the way you define comprehensive, so that if I'm a juvenile delinquent or something of that nature, that's going to go into my file. So if I try to buy a gun when I'm an adult, that will show up and be a flag, right?
Right. Not all juvenile offenses, but violent juvenile offenses.
Okay.
So if someone shoplifts, I wouldn't say that would be fed into the background check system. But if they have committed a felony, that sort of thing should be fed into the system.
Okay, let's get the red flag laws. Jason Mieres has a bill in Virginia Beach, conservative Republican. His bill basically has due process. You have a 14-day period. The Mieres bill is actually on the table. It's actually written. Have you looked at that? And is that kind of the type of thing with red flag laws, Mary Margaret, that you're talking about?
I have looked at his bill, and I would love the chance to speak with Delegate Mieres about it directly. I think it has a lot of the elements that work. In terms of some due process protections, and I have some questions on it, but I think in a lot of ways it does get to what I'm talking about. There is a temporary period. There is a threshold of evidence. For example, I'm probably not using the right legal terms. Mm-hmm. I'm not a lawyer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. which is a good thing.
Which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Okay. So conceptually, you're in favor of extending the red flag laws so that someone can say, hey, this person might be in a position to do harm to themselves or someone else. And so authorities will come in, you get 14 days, but you give the gun. I think Mieres' bill, you give it to a friend or a relative, and then you have to go before a judge, and they have to determine whether or not you can have those back. So that's kind of what you're talking about. That. So I was in favor of that up until last week, and let me just tell you my thinking on it and the concern I have, and then we'll get to magazine limits. Once I saw this phony whistleblower report, which is now driving another impeachment inquiry on President Trump, who, based on the transcript, didn't say or do anything wrong at all, and it's all concocted, it gave me pause. So how do you stop the person that has a political motivation to just go and disrupt your world by filing things because you have a Trump sign in your yard? In your red flag law, how do you stop the frivolous complaints based not on what you're saying, which is you could do harm to yourself or someone else, but you're a political enemy. Your neighbor has a Trump sign in his front yard. The neighbor is a Antifa leftist liberal, and they file a complaint and now tie you up with fees and lawyers and everything else to get your guns back. How do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, that's a risk pretty much in every law that we have in a lot of ways. But I think, again, within the body of the law, you've got to have it can't just be any complaint. It's got to go through a vetting process of and get a threshold of, an independent party or law enforcement determining that there is an imminent or threat for someone to be causing serious physical injury or causing death, and that's somebody threatening somebody else or at risk of suicide, which is something that's often lost in this discussion.
Right.
That's actually statistically more, you know, there are more young people that die from that than you know, mass gun incidents. But you've got to have those thresholds like we do in our legal system of, you know, no, I'm blanking on it, but the...
A restraining order.
Like a restraining order. Yes.
Right.
So there's got to be probable cause. There's got to be some threshold that you've got to pass, you know, so that somebody can't do that. In addition, you've got to have remedies within the body of the law. Again, I don't think a red flag law will work without these remedies. One, if there's a abusive, frivolous, however you want to phrase it, complaint made that the respondent has civil remedies against the accuser, the person that brought the claim.
Like, for instance, you have to pay, if it's a frivolous claim and
yes.
it's proven, you have to pay
yes.
lawyer's fees, court
yes.
costs, plus
yes.
Inconvenience fees. That would stop a frivolous, because I think what everybody's concerned about, especially after this nonsense that came out of Washington when I was there last week, is basically, again, I have a car. I have a Trump sticker on it. My next door neighbor hates Trump, and they know that I own guns. So let's file a complaint, tie me up. I have to spend money, get a lawyer, defend myself, give up my guns, get them back, take time off from work, and ha, ha, ha. But what you want is, if it's proven by a judge to be frivolous, that person, there's a consequence there. Is that my understanding?
Absolutely.
All right,
absolutely.
Here's the final thing, which is really a departure from even the president's position, limits on magazines. So, and what you said at the beginning, Mary Margaret, is you don't know what the limit is, right? Could be 50, could be 100. But I think...
I know it's not 100.
Here's the issue that many people have with that. Where's that stop, right? First it's 100, then it's 50, then it's 10. Then it's, they take your guns away, like Beto said. So in talking to your base right now, that's going to be their issue. I mean, I can't even go with you on that because of the problem is, where does it end? How do you answer that?
Well, I recognize that not everyone is going to agree with me on everything, whether it's this issue or others. I do know that 100 magazine limit is too many. Again, I don't know where the law is or where the line is. But here's what I say. What you're describing is a slippery slope argument, and you can really make that argument when passing any law, but I don't think that the slippery slope argument is a strong enough argument to not act. And again, what we're trying to do is to keep people safe, and balancing that against Second Amendment rights. And this is where I am. I don't think 100 magazine round I don't think that is something that we need in our society. I don't know where the line is, but I know it's not there. And that's where I am. Everybody might not agree with that, but that's where I am.
So if you've got four things on guns, if you do three of them, my point is the last one on magazine limits don't matter. If you close the loophole, right, which I'm 100% in favor of because the loophole's stupid. It's just dumb, and nobody can defend it. So just close it and knock it off. And so that's number one. Close a loophole. I'm with you on that. Comprehensive background checks. I mean, if you're going to do a background check, make it a background check. So I don't know why anybody would be not in agreement with that. The purpose of a background check is to stop somebody from getting their hands on a firearm that could do damage to themselves or harm to someone else. So that's the purpose of the background check. So to not make it extensive doesn't make any sense to me either. So I'm with you on that. And I can go with some form of a red flag law, especially with your caveat that there has to be a consequence consequence to the false accuser, which the Democrats and the liberals will have a whole cottage industry. Trust me, the next day they'll have a whole industry on how to take people's guns in a frivolous manner. But I think when you go down the path of limiting magazines, where's the stop? That's going to be a tough one for your base to swallow. I appreciate you have the courage to come on and defend it, but you've also got to get out your base. I can defend three of them. That one is a little bit tougher to do because you have no number. I mean, you say it's less than 100. Is it 25 rounds or 50? How much is it?
Again, I don't know where the line is. I'm cognizant of standard capacity magazines. I don't want to limit below that. But again, I don't have that line. I am a first-time candidate being asked to consider all kinds of things. This is where I've landed. I can tell you where my opponent is on all of these, which are he's been endorsed by all kinds of groups that want to ban assault rifles, AR-15s. I did, as part of my research, went out to a range and actually was there for 4 hours. I actually think got to shoot for 30 minutes. The rest of the time was education on best practices and safety and really the more important stuff. And did shoot some assault rifles. And really, I think that what we're talking about here is just slowing down the speed of violence. And I think that's something people can relate to. But again, everybody's not going to agree with me on every point. And the legislature it's not one person. It's 100 in the House of Delegates. And I think our founding fathers were wise to set it up that way 400 years ago. This is where I am. Other people are different in different places. I think we're going to come together and figure out the right answer. I think where people are coming from, and I've talked to a lot of people, I've knocked on thousands of doors across my district, and people just don't want us to do nothing. They want to figure out solutions, recognizing that this is an emotional issue. It's a complicated issue. It's not going to be solved by one thing. And there's some longer term issues here in terms of the value of life and, you know, people not having, just violence in our culture. All those things are long term issues. And I'm not going to come in. I'm not naive enough to think that I'm going to come in and fix all that. But where I am coming from, again, is this is about keeping people safe. I think there are some things we can do now that don't infringe upon Second Amendment rights that may have an impact and can have an impact on keeping our folks safe.
We're out of time. I want to thank Mary Margaret Castleberg, Republican running for open seat House of Delegates, Henrico, 73rd District. You're taking some courageous positions, and I appreciate the time in explaining that and your thinking to our listeners. Mary Margaret, if people want more information on your campaign, where do they go?
They can visit our website at www.castleberg4va.com, KASTELBERG, number 4va.com.
Mary Margaret, thanks for...
Talk about it.
AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Iraqi officials say seven anti-government demonstrators have been killed in ongoing protests in the capital, Baghdad, 17 people wounded. Medical official in a local hospital and a security official said that the seven were killed on Sunday in Sadr City, where hundreds have gathered trying to break through a security cordon to head to the city center. The officials did not provide details. The top negotiator in contract talks between General Motors and the United Auto Workers say that bargaining has hit a snag. In an email to union members, UAW's vice president cast doubt on whether there will be a settlement soon in a contract dispute that's led to a 21-day strike. The letter says that the union presented a proposal to the company Saturday. It says GM responded Sunday morning by reverting back to an offer that had been rejected and made few changes. More details at srnnews.com.
Sebastian Gorka here for Relief Factor, the 100% drug-free supplement that was formulated by doctors to help your body deal with inflammation and pain. The reason I've told so many of my friends about the 3-week quick start is because as we get older, occasional aches and pains can be a real problem, keeping you from sleeping through the night or doing the things you love and need to do, like taking walks or playing golf, going up or downstairs, or simply playing with your kids or grandkids. Tens of thousands are now like me, glad they ordered the 3-week quick start for just $19.95. After years of back pain, I found relief, and I believe you could too. Folks, this is why the father and son owners of Relief Factor, Pete and Seth Talbot, created the 3-week quick start, and they discounted it to only $19.95. Approximately 70% of those who order it go on to order more. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-83.
Hi, it's Mac with Baker Glass. If you're having trouble finding a clear option for that new shower enclosure or a replacement for that fog glass, then call the Baker Boys or find us at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better. Hi, this is Mac with Baker Glass, where we use our more than 32 years of experience to provide a complete glass service to all of our customers and a clear choice for you. See for yourself at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better.
School time is busy, so let Z-Best Original Tunis Restaurant at 7400 103rd Street help out. Z-Best Tunis Restaurant, just west of I-295, offers dine-in or takeout. The original Kronos Euros, oysters, shrimp, fish, wings, and more. It's all at Z-Best Original Tunis Restaurant. A pound of gizzards or livers is just $4.99, 30 jumbo shrimp for $9.99. And check out the new Sidewinder fries. Discounts for military first responders and school employees. Each order helps local schools. Z-Best Original Tunis Restaurant, 7400 103rd Street, on Facebook as Z-Best The Original.
Does your well water leave brown rust stains on clothes and fixtures? Does it smell bad? Get rid of it all with the HydroCare Iron 300X. HydroCare's multi-stage process gets rid of iron, sulfide, and odors. HydroCare is an easily installed, compact system without tanks, backwashing, or servicing, and only costs $799. You'll be amazed how fresh and clean well water can be. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, visit goodclearwater.com. Goodclearwater.com.
Friday nights are about to get fun again. WBOB will help you follow your favorite high school team this season with our Friday night score. Every Friday night, we'll keep you up to date on the score from your favorite teams, as well as the scores from your rivals. Enjoy the talk show. We'll keep an eye on the games for you. Friday night scoreboard, every Friday night on WBOB.
I told you never to interrupt me while I'm working.
Join the live Twitter discussion.
I'm Twittering. Did you get my tweets? I just quoted all over the place.
Follow John Fredericks at JF Radio Show.
Joining us now on the John Fredericks Radio Network, live in Rich Vegas today. In Rich Vegas, home of Rosie's Gaming and Rosie's Gaming Emporium. Go to rosiesgaming.com. And the RosieGaming.com studios right here in Rich Vegas with Corey Lewandowski. Corey Lewandowski, thanks for being with us, sir.
My pleasure, John. Good morning.
All right. I want to start with what really matters, and that's your two boys playing football, Alex and Reagan. And I know you're excited about it. I talked to you Saturday. You were at the games. Give us an update.
Well, you know, it's so fun. My my youngest boy is 8 years old, and my next boy is a twin, and he's 10. And they play, and it's you know, it's the highlight of our weekends, really, to go and watch these guys play. And it's so fun because at 8 years old, you know, they play both sides of the ball, and they're still learning the fundamentals of it. But unfortunately, both of our teams lost this weekend. But my son Alex had this amazing catch at the goal line that he took it away from a guy, and it was just a great play. And so the highlights like that really make it fun to be a parent and to go and support the children. And it's something my wife and I really like doing.
I tell you what, I was at baseball this weekend with my son in North Carolina, who plays in high school, as you know, Joseph. And it becomes what you do. We've been doing it with him every weekend since he's eight, and it is a lot of fun, and it really brings your family closer together. So I'm really excited for Alex and Reagan. And now your daughter is in she's in middle school now, isn't she? Man, they grow up so fast.
Seventh grade, John, and you know the scary thing is tomorrow. It's her first away field trip with the school. So she's going away for 2 days to what's called Nature's Classroom to go out and explore. Now, we live in the woods, just so we're clear, but they're going to take the kids from our little rural town and bring them out to the woods and show them around. So it's a little nerve-wracking for a parent that their child's going to be gone overnight for 2 nights. It's exciting. It's a growing thing. And so, we've been preparing for that for about a week now.
They grow up so fast. I remember when I went to your office and Trump Tower in 2015, you had your pictures up, and I said, what grade is your daughter in? And you said, she just started the third grade. Now she's in the seventh. They grow up so fast, no question about it. Corey, let's get to your Senate race. I know you're waiting for financials to come in from two or three of the candidates that have already announced for the Republican nomination in New Hampshire. Is that still your plan?
Well, it is, John. Look, the end of the third quarter was yesterday. I'm looking forward to seeing how much money these candidates have raised, where their support is from, how much grassroots support they have, how much small dollar support they have, and most importantly, how much money they have in the bank to take on Jean Shaheen, who we know is a fundraising juggernaut. We know that she's going to have probably $40 or $50 million into this race, and part of my political calculation is, if I don't get into this race, is there a candidate who can go there, be competitive, and ultimately defeat Jean Shaheen? Because that has to be what the goal is in New Hampshire, is to defeat Jean Shaheen so we can send someone to Washington, D.C., who's going to support the Trump-Pence agenda. And financial prowess is not the only factor, but it's clearly a factor. So let's see what happens when the fundraising numbers come out, and it's going to help to make my decision one way or the other. But, John, the other thing that's going to drive my decision, you know this because you know my loyalty, your loyalty is very much the same as mine, is if there is a need to ensure that I have to be available to fight back, to push back against this fake impeachment narrative, and I mean that from the outside. I don't have any interest, desire, or plans to go inside this White House. I've got a great life on the outside. And if the president needs additional people to help him push back on this narrative, whether it's me on television or me in front of the media or whatever that may be, it is so important for me in this country to make sure that Donald Trump is reelected and fights back on this fake narrative. That's the only other factor that could come into play as I'm making my decision to run for the United States Senate.
Well, look, Corey, it's a big one, and it's a big decision to be made because he's going to need defenders. Already we're seeing Republicans run away and hide. This is what they normally do because they don't really, many of them, there's a lot of them like Mitt Romney and others that don't really support the president, his America First agenda. They're globalists. And so any sign of trouble, they run away. But let me ask you about this Ukrainian witch hunt. I mean, I read that transcript five times. A lot of other people did. And I just can't see where this is going. I mean, there was no quid pro quo. The president made no promises that were out of line. It seemed to me to be a completely appropriate call. Nobody will ask a single question to Joe or Hunter Biden. So looking at this as it stands right now with this impeachment inquiry, which, by the way, is an inquiry. It's not a hearing because there's been no vote in the House, which means that the Republicans can't even subpoena their own witnesses. They can't counter subpoena. So the whole thing is a sham, is it not?
Well, it is, John. And look, a couple of things. There is not one member of the Democratic Party who can point to one violation of the call that the president made. He didn't break one code. He didn't break one law. It was a perfectly lawful and legal call. And, you know, John, I'm very concerned now, because now that we've seen the transcript of it and we know that there was nothing there, what the Democrats are asking for is release all of your phone calls. Give us your calls with Vladimir Putin. We want to see this. This is Pandora's box. When you've opened this box and now you're asking for leaders of our country to share private and candid conversations with leaders of other countries, that will put those other leaders in a position of not being able to be candid, not being able to be forthright. And let's just remember something. Barack Obama took $4 billion in American cash, put it on pallets, and flew it over to Iran. Are you telling me there is no transcript of the call that President Obama had with the president of Iran before $4 billion American dollars in cash was stuck on airplanes and flown overseas? So if we're going to open Pandora's box, then let's open the box and find out what was really said. I don't think that's good for the American people. I don't think it's good for the intelligence community. But just yesterday, John, through a Freedom of Information Act that was submitted by Citizens United to the State Department, I received a copy of the email outlining the vice president at the time, Joe Biden's meeting with then the prime minister of the Ukraine in June of 2016. Do you know what words are unredacted in this six-page email? The word all. So it's the heading that says all, comma, and then six pages of 100% redactions of Joe Biden's meeting with the prime minister of the Ukraine in June of 2016. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with what Joe Biden did, but let's find out. Was he talking about Paul Manafort? Was he talking about Hunter Biden in that meeting? Was he talking about anything that would be untoward in that meeting? I don't know. But if we're going to press Donald Trump for every conversation that the president has with a foreign leader, then let's hold every single leader before him accountable. And let's put this out in public, which I don't think the Democrats want, and I don't think is good for the American people.
The Democrats now are saying that it was the president's decision to hold up the transfer of funds going to the Ukraine that the Pentagon had approved for their defense. True or false?
Yeah, John, that's what they're saying. But the truth is, right, those funds did make it to where they were going. And what we know is that there is nothing illegal about this, okay? Slowing things down and making sure we're doing things right is not a crime. And making sure, look, when President Trump had a conversation, from what I understand, with Zelensky, he didn't even know the funds were slowed down. He didn't even know they were on hold. So he felt no pressure because he didn't know anything was wrong. This is a narrative that started off as collusion, obstruction. We've now gone to impeachment. And what I think is going to happen is you're going to see these 30-plus members of the Democratic caucus who are sitting in districts that Donald Trump won in my home state of New Hampshire won, and they're going to be put in a very bad position because they know if they vote for impeachment, it's the end of their political careers. And if they had any backbone whatsoever, those freshmen would stand up to AOC and the leadership of the Democratic Party and say, we're not doing this. We're not going to put the country through this. There are no high crimes and misdemeanors, and let's actually get something done so we can go back and campaign on what we've accomplished as opposed to trying to campaign on nothing. That will be their big downfall, John.
We're with Corey Lewandowski, the former campaign manager, Trump for President 2016. He's also the author of two New York Times best-selling books, Let Trump Be Trump and Trump's Enemies. You can get them at your favorite bookstore or on my website, johnfredericksradio.com. Order them there. You're good to go. Corey, let me ask you this. Why won't Pelosi have a formal vote on impeachment? This inquiry is kind of a sham because it gives only subpoena power to the committee chairman. There's not a formal vote. Nobody goes on the record. Isn't this just a witch hunt without a vote? Just have a vote.
John, this is very simple. Your listeners know this. There's no desire to actually come up with the truth. There's no desire to get to the bottom of what may or may not happen. If they wanted that, they could have an impeachment vote. They could put these people on the record. And what we saw when I had to testify in front of the House Judiciary Committee was They're not interested in finding the truth. They're interested in having a narrative that something has gone wrong. And that's where, look, I looked at the polling data. According to CBS, they're saying 55% of Americans now want to see an impeachment inquiry move forward. Well, look, I want to inquire about a lot of things. Doesn't tell me anything. But this is also the same firm, John, and you know this, CBS, that 3 weeks before, 2 weeks before the election, came out with a poll that said Hillary Clinton was going to win 51-40 in the election. So you have to take these things with a grain of salt. And Nancy Pelosi has no interest in having a formal impeachment proceeding yet. That's why this is going through the House Intelligence Committee. And I remind your listeners that Adam Schiff is the same congressman who said unequivocally there was evidence of collusion with a foreign government when it related to the Russia witch hunt, that he saw it, that it was firsthand, and that Donald Trump was going to, you know, be guilty of that, only to come and find out that, of course, all of that was just complete nonsense. It never existed, but he never apologized for it. But now his committee is going to head up this inquiry, and it's going to be a sham. We know that.
What about the subpoenas that they just leveled against Rudy Giuliani, saying that, you know, he had no right really to go so-called represent the government in this because he was Trump's lawyer? Where's that going, Corey?
Well, John, it goes nowhere, because the president has the right as the executive of our country to appoint private citizens to do tasks if he wants to, and that's a right that he has used and other presidents. Look, I know going all the way back to at least Ronald Reagan, they were using private citizens to have conversations. There's nothing illegal about it. It's standard practice. And, John, the other thing that's very standard practice, which no one wants to talk about, and they think that the president had something to do with, which I know he did not, was taking this phone call between him and Zelensky and putting it on some other server, some code word classified server. Look, that's standard operating procedure. Barack Obama did it hundreds, if not thousands, of times over the course of 8 years. And what we know is that the deep state, these aren't the tinfoil hat wearing freaks who think black helicopters are flying over their house every day. These are the people who are the career bureaucrats who hate this president, have consistently leaked private conversations, whether it's with the Prime Minister of Australia, whether it's with Theresa May, whether it's this conversation. That is the deep state. And I believe that the additional level of scrutiny that this call is placed onto an additional server is warranted, if not all the president's calls are warranted, because people have access to them. They're disseminating that information. We know unequivocally, and the Democrats will admit this, the whistleblower had no firsthand knowledge of this. They changed the rule to allow him to become a whistleblower because it used to require firsthand knowledge, which means someone who heard the conversation leaked it, and to me that alone should be a crime.
This is unbelievable what has gone on. What about the fact that the Republicans have no subpoena power, that the way this committee, the way Nadler and Schiff have set this up, because it's an inquiry, they have stripped the ranking members of any ability to subpoena their own witnesses as rebuttals. What about that?
Well, John, it just goes to demonstrate, as we've said, nobody wants, the Democrats have no interest in getting to the truth. They just want to make this a political theater. That's all this is. If they really want to get to the truth, they'd say, hey, let's go have a vote on the House floor. Let's take it to the caucus. Let's have an up or down vote if we're going to have an impeachment inquiry. If we're going to have an impeachment inquiry, then let's go do that. But if we're going to have an impeachment proceeding, that's a very different process. And they don't want to do that because they know that they don't have enough votes in their caucus, even though they say that they do. But, John, the reality is this. 218 votes are going to be required to impeach the President of the United States on purely partisan political grounds. Mm-hmm. They are moving that by December of this year, they're going to have that because they have limited the Republicans' abilities to call their own witnesses, to rebut witnesses. And now, look, John, we saw it when I had to testify. They changed the rules halfway through, and now they say committee can ask questions as opposed to just members. Consultants to the committee can ask questions. This is the sham of shams, and if you really want to see the difference, go back and look at those members of Congress who were in Congress in 1998 and 1999 when Bill Clinton was going through the impeachment. Listen to what they said then, and listen to what they're saying now, and it's a 180-degree difference because it just shows it's all political.
Corey Lewandowski with us. Corey, let me ask you something straight up here. The president's not going to be impeached, right? He didn't. There's no crimes that anybody can see.
John, I don't agree with that, John. Look, I think the House is going to vote to impeach this president. I don't think the Senate is going to convict him. But I think at the end of the day, the Democrats have their own agenda, and that is to destroy this president because they hate him more than they love their country. And I think by Christmas, you will see 218 people voting to impeach this president, even though he didn't commit a crime.
And then it will go to the Senate. He'll not be convicted. And remember, when this happened to Bill Clinton, and I was very involved in this, so I kind of remember it, covering it. When this happened to Clinton, and what was it, 96 or 97?
99.
I mean, his popularity went up 17 points because people saw that. They just saw it for what it was. It was dumb. And the guy, you know, whatever you thought of the guy, the whole thing tied the United States up. It tied up the government, and people got pissed off over it. And his ratings, his favorability went up dramatically. What's the Democrats' end game here?
Yeah, John, the difference with Bill Clinton's impeachment and this president's impeachment is Bill Clinton had, by and large, the mainstream media on his side, right? This president does not. Look at the media coverage of him over the last 3.5 or 4 years, right? It has all been negative. And so the difference now is the media, and I go back to the CBS poll, is saying, well, the majority of the American people want to see this move forward. That's their own narrative. And so unlike when Bill Clinton was impeached, he had the media on his side saying, hey, this was about sex. This had nothing to do with it. It wasn't a crime. Bill Clinton ultimately was impeached for lying under oath, which is a felony.
Right.
Okay, he was disbarred for that.
Right.
Donald Trump has not committed one crime
right.
to be impeached for, but they will still move in the political expediency that they have to impeach him. I think it's going to hurt the Democrats at the ballot box in 2020 when Donald Trump is on there. But the difference is this time, the media, the MSNBCs of the world, and you know all the networks, they're going to support this impeachment. And that is the difference between the Bill Clinton time and the Donald Trump time. This time, the media is going to be in favor of it, not because that the president's done anything wrong, but because they hate the way this president delivers messages and the way he fights for this country.
What's their end game? What is the Democrats' end game here? Because politically, you look at this, they're never going to convict him. It's a sham. Everybody's going to see it over time. Then they have to go back to the voters in 2020 with a record of zero accomplishments. No infrastructure, no USMCA, no surprise billing, nothing. They've done nothing since the Democrats have been there. So, Corey, what's their end game?
John, the end game for most of these members of Congress is to defeat their far-left socialist primary agenda people. That's what this is about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Nadler in the Upper West Side of New York City mm-hmm. is not going to lose a general election to a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Congressman Adam Schiff in liberal California is not going to lose in a general election. It is the primary race that they are protecting themselves from. And Nancy Pelosi knows that the AOC, Rashid Tlaib wing of the Democratic Party, which is running the party, has so much control mm-hmm. over that primary process that they're forcing their members to take these votes to protect themselves in primaries to say that they are far left enough to continue to represent the constituents. Look, they can't remove this president. I don't believe they have the votes in the Senate. I do believe that they're doing this because we've heard their own members say it. The only way to beat Donald Trump at the ballot box is to impeach him. They've said it. We know what their agenda is, and that is not the agenda of the American people. But we've got an uphill battle, John. This is a full-scale war, in my opinion. The fact that they're trying to impeach a president who's committed no crimes, who's broken no laws, is very, very sad. This is exactly what the Constitution prohibits. This is not what our forefathers wanted. You don't just remove someone from office because you don't like their politics. First, they use the intelligence community to try and remove him, stop him, and then remove him. And now they're using their powers in Congress to remove a duly elected president who gets 63 million votes, but they can't point to one crime he's committed.
Should the whistleblower's name be exposed?
Absolutely, John.
Why?
Look, we have a system in our government, in our Constitution. You have the right to confront your accuser. We don't know who this person is. We don't know what their political bias is. We know that the inspector general originally said that their complaint, this is the career employees at the Department of Justice. They said that the complaint that was filed did not rise to the level of forwarding it on. And part of the reason they gave in that was this person had an inherent bias against Donald Trump. We don't know if this CIA officer who was detailed to the National Security Council, as has been stated, had worked for, you know, a member of Congress, a U.S. senator, has, you know, had things on their Facebook or social media activity that has been anti-Trump. We don't know if this person is an acolyte of Brennan, who we know hates Donald Trump, right? We need to find out who this person is. John, can you imagine you walk into a police station and you say, hey, I just witnessed a crime against my family. Who did it? Oh, I don't want to tell you, right? I'm not going to point out who the criminal was. It doesn't happen that way, John. You have to be able to point to who the person is, and that person has a right to come and answer questions, and you have a right to ask that person questions. Look, you get into a car accident, whatever it is, you have a right. If someone commits a crime against you, you have a right to look at that person in the eye, ask them questions. That's how our system works. These anonymous complaints don't hold water. Look, you can't get a parking ticket based on an anonymous complaint. It doesn't work that way. So why should the President of the United States be held to a different standard than every other American in this country? He should be held to the same standard, which is give us the opportunity to know who this person is. That person wants to make the complaint. They knew that that complaint was going to be made public eventually. They should have to stand for what they've written, and we should have the opportunity to ask that individual, where did you get the information from? Since it wasn't firsthand knowledge, who told you that? I believe that would be a crime, sharing that information. Did you work with a law firm? Who asked you to file this? These are all relevant issues. Let's get to the bottom of them.
Corey, final question. It's been my theory that part of this witch hunt, this fallacy that they're doing, this phony investigation, is to tarnish Bill Barr, the Attorney General, somehow dirty him up a little bit before the indictments come back from the investigation that he's doing now. You think I'm onto something?
I do. I think the Democrats want to see Bill Barr recuse himself from this investigation, just like they forced Jeff Sessions to do. They know that there is no way under the statute that they can do that other than for public pressure. So I think they want to pressure Bill Barr to do that. Bill Barr is an exemplary individual. He is of the utmost integrity. They are continuing to attack him personally and professionally. I think it's shameful. And when you go back and you look at Eric Holder and the way he represented the Office of Attorney General, I think you see a clear dichotomy here. One man is a complete professional, Bill Barr. The other one was an unapologetic wingman of his boss, the President of the United States. And when it was held in contempt, he just completely dismissed the charges. So I don't want to see Bill Barr continue to be attacked. I think his integrity is too high, and that's a Democrat's plan. And you're right, John, is to have him ultimately recuse himself is what they would want him to do.
All right, Corey Lewandowski, we're out of time. When are you going to make a decision on U.S. Senate? Give us a date.
Look, it's very soon. I want to see the financial numbers from the candidates who are running. My guess is they're not going to be very high, and that's going to help me get even closer to my decision. And, John, you know, StandWithCorey.com is the site that's been stood up to support a potential race. StandWithCorey.com. You can go there. You can sign up. You can get information. And the more people that sign up, will be more encouragement that I will have.
I'm in. StandWithCorey.com. Corey, I got to go.